Veteran Podcast. Thank you for your service.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. It's great to be with you. Today, we're really kind of expanding what we talk about on this show. We're talking to somebody a little bit of a different experience in the military because he's our neighbor to the north. Today on the show, we have Hendrik Vanderbellen. He is he's an officer with the infantry in the Canadian military. So he's going to tell us a little bit about some of the unique things that are going on in Canada, some of the experiences that he's had with the U.S. military, and where we might have the same issues in our healthcare, our, VA type stuff and all of that. I mean, I'm sure that military is military and we all deal with the same issues when we get out. So I'd love to hear that perspective as well. But Hendrik, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
So
it's great to be here.
Yeah, it's really good to sit down with you. I've never sat down with anybody from the Canadian military, so this is a first for me, but I'm excited about it. As many people know, my brother lives up in Canada. He moved there with his wife and her family, and my niece and nephew are up there. You know them. So it's kind of cool to get the Canadian perspective on things. I think we have a lot of similarities, but we also have a lot of differences. And it's good to talk about all those things. But before we get on into all that, let's hear a little bit about you. Where'd you come from? Why'd you decide to join the military? Did you go to school first? All that kind of stuff. Please tell us a little bit.
Sure. So first off, I'm a platoon commander in the Royal Vendeuxième, or known as in English, the Vendeuse, at the 3rd Battalion, which is a light battalion in the Mountain Company. And I've been there for a little under a year. Before that, it's a Francophone regiment, and it's based out of Quebec, just north of Quebec City. And I was born in Montreal, so kind of just fits together. Born in Montreal, moved around a lot as a kid, lived in Michigan when I was up until kindergarten, and then moved to Ontario and then moved back to Quebec. Dad worked construction, so moved around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Military was never really on my radar for most of my life, actually. It was more when I was finishing up high school and wanted to go to university and had the grades to go to university, but didn't want to finish university with a bunch of student debt. And I had always been big into sports, always been big into like personal challenges and whatnot. And I always had a respect for the Canadian military, being that my dad was Dutch. Grandparents immigrated from the Netherlands and the Canadian military liberated them during the Second World War.
Okay.
So I always had a respect for the Canadian military. That was from a different perspective than, say, people from the United States or Canada whose grandparents fought in the war. My grandparents were liberated in the war. So it just kind of fell into place, if you will, after high school. Submitted my my application to the armed forces, to the Canadian Armed Forces. Applied to go to the Royal Military College of Canada. Was accepted. Eventually made it in and joined the military in 2016. Commenced basic training. Did four years of the Royal Military College of Canada. Finished with a bachelor's degree. In military strategic studies, and finished up my what you guys called branches. We called them trades. Finished up my trade training as an infantry officer, as my platoon commander phases, and then got posted to got posted to the light battalion.
Very cool. So one thing that I have to ask you is like, maybe it's a call me an ignorant American with how your system works, but we here on this side, college is free. Now, I heard you say you didn't want a lot of student loan debt. I know that's a big concern down here, and a lot of people join the military for that reason down here, is that you can pay for college. Now, again, it's a little bit of ignorance on my part. I always just assumed that college was free in Canada. Is that not the case, or is it like kind of like depends on where you go type thing?
So schooling is much less expensive in Canada for university than it is in the United States. And again, it depends on which province you're in and which university you go to. So it wasn't, you'd say it wasn't a very big obstacle, but it was something that I definitely wanted to, that much more of a leg up in life, you know, would definitely help.
Yeah, if you can avoid debt, avoid debt.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? And the part of the military also just attracted me, and when I and it immediately clicked when I got in, and absolutely loved it. So
now, once you were in, you're in active duty. Did you have a lot of experience with the United States military? Was there some kind of cross service exercises, things like that? Because I know being a mountain division, I mean, we have the 10th. Right in New York here, which is right across the border from Montreal. So I would imagine exercise-wise and things like that, or even deployment-wise, you would run into these guys.
Yeah, so a lot of that has actually been stalled because of COVID.
Okay, just, yeah.
Everything's been stalled. We used to go down, not, I haven't gone down, but the mountain company used to go down with some helicopter squadrons from Canada and go down to Vegas to do some mountain training. And a helicopter, we guys would basically call air assault.
So like a red flag type thing and that type of stuff. Like we call our exercises, I mean, at least for the Air Force, our exercises in Vegas, which we do a lot of, they call them like red flag, and it'll be joint service. It'll be, you know, all different types of MOSs and all that kind of stuff. So it's everybody just goes there, play a war game, go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So we used to do that. I hope it's coming back.
Yeah.
I hope. I would love to go. I know we used to do some exchanges with the 10th Mountain. We also do exchanges with the French military.
Okay, cool.
For mountain stuff. But a lot of that's slowed down. When I was at the Royal Military College at RMC, I got the chance to go on exchange to West Point.
That's awesome.
So I did a semester at West Point, and I was on the climbing team there. So most of my experience with the American military is not really with the American military, but West Point specific.
With cadets and, more than anything, yeah.
Exactly, with the making of your officers.
Yes, yeah.
Honestly, it was a great time. It was. There are some highly professional, highly motivated individuals over there that want to serve their country, and they absolutely kick ass at what they do. Yeah. And I know them now, and some of them are Apache pilots, a bunch of them are infantry officers now in the American Army, and they're solid guys and girls.
That's awesome. And now, so like the Royal Military Academy is kind of similar to West Point. It's kind of on the same parts, a military college, but you get a bachelor's when you get out. But to do it, you have to sign some type of a commission. You have to go into the military when you're done. You owe a service at the end of it, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
So paid subsidized education for minimum time service after graduation.
And what's the commitment when you guys finish up? I forget what it is for the West Point guys, but what is it for you guys?
It's 5 years minimum for us. All right. My contract is longer than that, but it's 5 years mandatory service after.
Okay. That's not that bad. Listen, for free education, 5 years. Do anything for 5 years
for a good job,
and you're getting out with a good job. Exactly. Now, you were talking a little bit about COVID. You finished in 2016, you said, and you joined in 2016. So you finished like right. They basically threw you to the wolves.
Yeah.
So what was that like? I got to ask, because I know down here, COVID restrictions were crazy, but having my brother up there, Canada kind of took it to a higher level. I mean, you guys couldn't even go to restaurants and things like that. I mean, it was really locked down. Where here, it depended on what state you were in. If you were in Texas, you do whatever you want. If you were in Florida, you do whatever you want. If you were in New York, a little bit more locked down. What was it like being in the military and just getting out of the academy and going in to COVID?
When COVID hit, the military dispersed.
Okay.
And that was pretty much my experience with COVID for about a year.
Wow.
At home, working at distance. So I finished up my degree at home, got my degree and commission over Zoom. That was a interesting experience. Anticlimactic, if you will.
I would say, yeah.
Of education. And then I had some time to kill between the end of my degree and my next phase of training. So I just started my master's degree. So it was actually pretty productive for me. I was lucky. It was bad timing for graduate in the middle of COVID. And then it's kind of a weird gray area where there's a bunch of lockdowns happening, a bunch of rules coming out, and the military's dispersed. Some of the military is getting back, operating within the COVID environment. But I managed to like make the best out of it, keep busy, and went to do my face training and then went to battalion. There were still some rules up until recently surrounding COVID with different masks at work, masks at work and different isolation protocols. And some of that's still around, but for the most part, it's day-to-day life now.
So, that's good. That's good. Back to normal is always a good thing. Now, you were getting out of academy and like you said, you started up your master's and stuff. Was there, have you talked to anybody who was dealing with it a little bit from maybe like the enlisted side, some of your troops now? What was it? I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to disperse. Like that doesn't even register in my brain. Like, I don't know what, as an enlisted guy, like if I'm not on base doing my job, what am I doing? You know, so like, how did they handle that? How did they keep standards up, things like that? Because you're not there.
So a lot of the standards kind of fell off the bandwagon.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And it's, you could say in the past, since the comeback of Christmas leave, that all that's kind of being picked back up. But it honestly, it depends on the units.
Okay.
So my battalion, the 3rd Battalion, was quite busy last year. So a lot of guys were at work.
Okay.
They were still going out ranges. They were still going out into the field. Now, a lot of that was adapted with different rules surrounding COVID, limiting amount of guys per transport vehicle or per tent or whatever. But they were still making it happen. So some people dispersed and went home. That happened mostly the forces wide for a while, but then slowly a bunch of units started getting back together and just following the health guidelines and the rules, and they made it work. That's what soldiers do. They make it work.
Listen, that is very, very true. That's a great statement, because it doesn't matter, Canadian, American, you figure it out. You know what I mean? Especially the enlisted forces, you get a couple good NCOs tell you what to do, how to keep your nose clean, how to stay out of trouble. Because I could also see that with the loosening of standards and things like that, your younger guys, there's a lot of opportunity to get yourself in trouble. If you're not, you know, in that regimented state of, hey, listen, this is what you're doing. You're here every day. You're PTing. You know, you're doing your exercises. You're doing your job. You're preparing for your next deployment, whatever it is, your next exercise. When you take all that away, it's like kid in a candy store. Now I can just get myself in trouble. So it's good. Leadership is really where I kind of am going with this, is that, like, as yourself, a new leader, have you kind of had to adapt your style of what you thought you were going to do when you had a platoon to now maybe dealing with these guys coming out of being dispersed and all of that? Have you had to adjust in any way, or did you kind of have, hey, this is the way I'm going to lead my guys, I'm sticking with that?
So yes, it has changed, but not for the reasons that I would have thought. I would have thought exactly like you mentioned, coming out of COVID, but that I didn't even have to worry about. The guys are motivated.
Okay.
They want to do their job.
Right, right.
They are there and they want to do well. They want to excel and they want to get the job done. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there.
Right.
So I had no, and I have no issue with that. And my entire command team, my section commanders and my platoon 2IC, they're all on the ball and they're all doing their job, and all the troops underneath are all spot on. The challenge that I didn't expect, that I knew was an issue in the military, but I didn't expect it to be say that heavy, was the whole retention issue and the lack of personnel.
Yeah,
that's the biggest one. Is I'm a platoon commander, but I got a very small platoon. That's the thing. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of people missing in the entire military right now. Everywhere.
And we're having that problem down here too. We are. It's a real issue, recruiting and retention. I mean, it's on both sides. We're not getting new people in for a lot of different reasons. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on your side of things. And people are getting out, again, for a lot of different reasons. Especially your mid-level NCOs, the guys that maybe in our world are staff sergeants or sergeants or, you know, depending on the branch of service, they're not staying in. So you're losing that mid-level. You're staying very top-heavy. You're not getting new guys in, and you're losing that mid-level leadership that usually protects the lower-level guys from too much, you know, shit running downhill. What are your thoughts on why it's happening up there? Because, you know, it's funny that it's happening north of the border and south of the border. So it's a little weird to me. Maybe it's the same reason.
So a lot of people point at COVID and say, oh, everyone went home and they realized they had a good life at home, you know, being around family, being around friends. Mm-hmm. And you can see that there's different job opportunities when you have time and you go home, and now you have, all of a sudden you have time to start looking at a bunch of stuff around you and you realize, oh, there's other job opportunities, and, you know, these things aren't that bad. And so a lot of people released from the Canadian military during COVID, but COVID just catalyzed it. It's been a problem since for a while now. I remember when I joined, it was an issue, but there was enough people in the Army that there wasn't a lack of personnel. Hmm. There was a lack of retention, but the lack of personnel hadn't jumped in yet. So this goes before COVID. This goes before, this is back to the mid, goes back to early 2010s, 2015, that there was a slow snowball that picked up and COVID hit and just catalyzed the whole thing. Mm. There's a bunch of different reasons. One person put it to me like this: it's not the 1950s anymore. You can't just ask your family. Like, some people can, some families can, but this is the exception, not the rule, versus the 1950s. Is you can't just ask a family to pick up and move today.
It's true.
Like, for example, the average income in Quebec, the average household income in Quebec is like $60,000 a year.
Okay.
So on your salary, on one person's salary for one home, you might be able to make ends meet once you work your way up the chain of command.
It's right? Tough. Property value up there is very expensive. Like, to buy a home in Quebec was not – I remember when my brother was shopping. It was not cheap.
It blew up.
It was huge. Right. Like, they left New Jersey thinking, hey, we're going to have all this money to buy a place up there. Now, luckily, my brother's wife is from there and knew kind of temper that expectation. But that money didn't go as far as I think what my brother thought coming from here. Like, oh, we're going to go up there and get whatever we want.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
Nope. And COVID blew up the housing market in Canada big time. So
Same here.
So economics is part of it. A lot of people are leaving the military because of that. Is they're saying, oh, you're going to get posted. And they say, well, if you post me, you're going to have no one to post because I'll release. And they post them anyways, and they release. So that's part of the problem. Another part of the problem is definitely leadership. Definitely leadership is, and I'm not going to blame individual leaders or the chain of command. What I do find problematic is the way a career for leadership is set up. Now, I think it's very well set up for NCOs.
Okay.
For the enlisted, I think it's quite well set up. They can stay in an operational unit for years, like over a decade.
Which is what most of those guys want. They want to stay in operations. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Before they get posted out somewhere.
Right.
Whereas officers, you'll get posted out within 3 to 5 years if you're lucky. 4 years, you'll stay in one place, and then you're going to get posted.
So you lose that continuity in the units.
Exactly. So it's not just about the officer corps. It's also, well, the officer corps has an effect on the troops.
Of course,
it's the leadership. It's that connection of planning and execution. And if you are continuously refreshing the planning, that means you're refreshing the execution. Things can get repetitive, and if they get repetitive too quickly, some guys might not like that.
Yeah, morale decreases. Then you start looking at other options. You start saying, "Oh, maybe I'll just get out," or whatever the case may be. You have a bad commander that comes in, or a bad officer that comes in, replaces a good one that you were really comfortable with, or whatever the case may be. And I'm not saying good, bad, as far as the person themselves, but they have different leadership styles, and you might look at it. I'm not into the way this guy's running the unit. Now my choice, I'm just getting out. I'm done. Cause I'm not going to see, and I'm not going to wait to see what the next guy is. I'm just going to pack up and go.
Yep. I remember some of my teachers from RMC, when they were platoon commanders, for 4 years. They got to an operational unit and they were there as a platoon. So if you have that continuity, you have a lieutenant come in and he makes it to captain, and he's there as a platoon commander for that many years. Imagine what you can do with your platoon and your company, the buildup you can do. And every 4 years is not that bad. And then you can reset it. Doesn't seem that bad, but unfortunately, the snowball effect of the lack of retention has got it to a point where we just need to push people through the meat grinder right now.
Yeah.
Like my platoon command time will probably be quite short. Yeah. So I'll still be a platoon commander after JRTC, hopefully next summer. And if I'm really lucky, I'll be able to keep it for another full year, but I probably won't.
Yeah. And I saw it, and this is why I definitely agree with you that they love throwing COVID as an excuse. It's a catch-all now. Well, that was COVID. I see it in the civilian world. I see it in the military world. It's an easy excuse now when you have an issue. You blame COVID because you can't say yes or no. You can't. It's a very hard argument because it's kind of almost an abstract reason why things, you don't have to get very specific with why something's not working. You can just say COVID and now all the reasons go away. But I remember, I got out in 2005 and I remember my time in Italy. I was there for 3 years. I had 4 officers for my flight in 3 years. I had, I think, 2 second lieutenants, a captain, and I'm pretty sure it was a first lieutenant that was waiting to put captain on. So basically, we'll just call him a captain for the fun of it. If it wasn't for the senior NCOs that were fairly constant, I had a chief that was there for two of those years. I had a chief there. They were the ones that really kept the the continuity kept us prepared, kept the guys, because we were doing just rolling deployments. You know, everybody was deploying. It was, you know, the start of Iraq. It was Afghanistan was, you know, very hot and heavy. So it was, if it wasn't for those guys, morale would have just been awful. And morale wasn't great, but it would have been really bad. So we saw exactly what you're talking about. Hell, going back, you know, the better part of 20 years ago, we were dealing with that same problem. And they haven't fixed it. It's the same issue. And you guys are seeing it too.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's the NCOs that make the difference. They're the, like the mm-hmm. core that keeps everything together. And that's not flattery. There are legitimate articles, like military mm-hmm. papers, published articles about how NCO corps, it's not for nothing in 2008 that Russia decided to build or try to build an NCO corps,
right,
which they didn't have prior to that. Mm-hmm. It's because they actually make the difference, very much so. And unfortunately, that's what we're losing right now.
Yeah.
Is like, I don't have any sergeants in my platoon. Now my master corporals, which I guess, I don't know what would be the equivalent to it. It'd be like a section or a squad second in command.
Okay.
Technically would be the position,
mm-hmm.
but they're awesome guys. They're extremely competent, extremely good. And they can definitely be the section or squad commanders. I would trust them all with my life. They're solid guys,
mm-hmm.
but that's weird that I don't have any sergeants.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
but that's big. That retention issue. I mean, because you see it. So like that would be, you know, in the Air Force, that would be having your senior airmen, got good senior airmen, E4s, you know, they're on the shop floor every day doing their job, keeping things rolling. But as soon as their enlistment is up, they're getting out. So they're not making staff sergeant. They're not becoming NCOs. And they're taking all that knowledge, all that kind of hard work with them, you know, that get up and go and everything that they provide, that's not continuing on to stay in the ranks and show the next group. They're just leaving.
Yeah.
Which is very tough.
And a big part of it is actually, like, they want to do. They mm-hmm. want to go out and do stuff.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. It's like studying to be a doctor, to be a surgeon, and never going to the ER, never going to a hospital.
Yeah. See,
you studied that, you did that, you trained for that, but and you just want to go do that.
Mm-hmm.
And
that lack of mission,
we don't have many. Yeah, exactly.
That's not good. It's not good for guys getting out. We talk about it on this show all the time. One of the hardest things for guys getting out is that lack of mission, lack of purpose. You know, you get out, you think everything's just going to be rosy and, well, I don't have a job right away. I have a job, but it's kind of crappy and it doesn't really stimulate me in any way. So now I'm just kind of sitting around. You don't have that same group of guys that you're used to, girls, whatever. You know, you're kind of on your own. You're on an island and that's not a good place to be. But it's the same thing for the guys that are still in because, like I said, in 05 – if you were infantry in 05, the ops tempo was crazy. You were doing what you were supposed to do. Me, listen, I was a mechanic. I was working on vehicles whether or not I was deploying or not. So I kind of felt like I was always supporting guys going downrange. You know, we were dropping the 173rd into Iraq. We were sending cargo down. We were always on the airfield doing stuff, working. It kind of kept you motivated, kept you going. But for the infantry guys, once that ops tempo starts dropping off, now you don't have that same kind of like feeling. And guys coming in, again, they see it. Are you going to join the infantry? And well, we're not going in. We're not fighting anybody. That's a weird situation. It's been 20 years since we could say that. You know, we're 20 years of fighting people and infantry being at that tip of the spear. Now we're in that lull. You know, you're not really... All right, where's the mission? Where's the deployment?
Yep. Canada finished their combat missions in Afghanistan in 2014.
Yeah.
And I did my infantry phases in 2018, 2019, and 2021. And it was a very interesting comparison between all those And if you go back and if you go and read about just military knowledge, retention of lessons learned, the drop off of lessons learned is so steep, so fast. Mm-hmm. And Vietnam is a really good example of that. Like the lessons forgotten from Vietnam as the war in Iraq started, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, is everything had to be relearned. Like everything from urban to CQB. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for us. And it's weird being on the opposite end of that. It's not the learning, but seeing the drop off of knowledge.
Right. You're seeing that decline.
That, yeah. And it's weird having read about it, studied it, and then now actually seeing it. And like I had a bunch of my instructors were all guys who went to Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And as my training went forward, there were less and less of them. And I could tell that the value of the training also started to stretch thinner and started to go back more towards doctrine and what was written in the book and by the book. And I was just thinking and going, this is not going to be very good for the next conflict.
And we see it here.
So many.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like I said, I'm out almost, it's the better part of 20 years. I'm out just about, it's going to be 18 years coming up very shortly. Those guys are all retired. You know, those guys at that high ops tempo that all went to Iraq, they all went to Afghanistan. Those guys are done. They're out of the military. Even if they stayed in 20 years, they're out. So all that knowledge, all that, like you said, that hands-on experience goes away. Now, the leaders that are in place and the people doing the work are there. Like you said, it's more, hey, I was told this. I heard about this situation. This is how you're supposed to handle it. It's not, hey, I was in that situation and this is what you do. Very different.
It's a normal cycle. Unfortunately, it's a normal cycle as well.
I think we got spoiled though, because for especially in the United States, we had almost the better part of 20 years of guys deploying and having those experiences. We never had that before. You know, now we're at that drop off. We haven't been in a drop off since, like you said, probably after Vietnam.
Yeah. And it happens every time. Mm. Every time after every conflict, there's always a drop off. And having like studied military like history,
of course,
it always irks me a bit, because I know at the end of the day, the bottom line is in the next conflict, it's going to cost lives. Mm. Is those lessons lost will cost lives, and it shouldn't.
Right.
To me, it shouldn't.
Now, as somebody who studied it, may I ask you, as a new leader, and you're a new leader in your military, do you have ideas of maybe what to do to combat that? Because I'd be very interested to see, as someone, you've identified it, and that's always the first part is to identify, hey, this is our issue. But now how do we tackle that? How do we make it so that we don't have as steep a drop off, or we at least keep some of the lessons learned and incorporate it in our training or whatever the case may be?
And it's very simple, and you don't need to have studied military history to do it. Work as a command team.
Okay.
Listen to your NCOs. Everyone said that. Listen to your NCOs.
Everybody always says it.
everyone always says it. But what that actually means is, go work with them. Go work with them as a command team, as a team. Hmm. Like the chain of command is there not for you to be in charge. The chain of command is there for the division of labor, division of tasks. And at the end of the day, the rank system, chain of command is there so that there is a pecking order, so that when a decision needs to be made, there is a veto power at certain levels.
Right.
And if you can separate that from getting the task accomplished, well, now you can work as a team. And then you can all be on the same level for trying to tackle a problem. And if you just think together, you don't necessarily need experience. Experience always helps. But in those gap, in those interwar periods, if you will, work together. Humans have always worked together. That's what make us so good. And on the evolutionary scale, mm-hmm. because for millions of years, we've worked together in packs and we've evolved this way. Well, work with your NCOs, tackle a problem together. Like, yes, there is the doctrine way of doing it. You need to either do a frontal or a flanking, and this is the procedures. But at the end of the day, if you have a simple plan, cover and move, and you're efficient, I think that can tackle a lot of the problems.
There's a great scene from a show that I love, Generation Kill on HBO. It's a great show about the invasion of Iraq. And one of the first scenes in the first episode, they're doing training in Kuwait, and they exercise one of their Humvees being hit and dropping off. And they do an after action, and the lieutenant comes over. It's Lieutenant Fick. He comes over, and he says, you know, you guys slowed when that Humvee got hit. You shouldn't have slowed. You got to get out of the kill zone. You know, you're going to get taken out yourself. And the NCO said, well, we're just supposed to leave the guy? And they're like, hey, this is the SOP. This is what we're supposed to do. And the NCO stood up and said, no disrespect to the SOP, but why don't we just one guy drop back to check him out, make sure he's okay, everybody else keep moving forward out of the kill zone, cover by fire, and deal with the situation. And the lieutenant stopped and said, yeah, as long as you don't let your emotions get a hold of you, that's a great idea. That's how we'll move forward. But that's exactly an example of what you're talking about, a conversation about a task, putting rank a little bit aside, not being intimidated by somebody, an NCO saying this instead of an officer or whatever the case may be, lower ranking, higher ranking. And now we have a safer way to move forward, a better way to move forward. So it's just cool because, like, that's what I thought of when you were saying that, because that's a prime example of an NCO and an officer working together to make that the best situation possible.
If you go through training to get good at training, you won't get good at problem solving. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go practice section attacks or platoon attacks or a company attack, and you just follow the procedures, you get qualified on courses. You go on your platoon commander's course, you go on your squad, or I don't know what you guys call it, but your section commander's mm-hmm. course, or you go on these different career courses, you will be taught the procedure, and then you will be evaluated on that procedure, because it's the foundation upon which you build. But after that, you need to be able to work, like you just said, work through problems mm-hmm. and problem solve. That's it. You can modify SOPs. At the end of the day, the point is to get the mission done, bring everyone home.
Of course. And especially when it's about lives and making sure that the guy standing next to you makes it back, you don't want somebody to get killed because the SOP said to do this. You have to be able to adapt and overcome.
Not too long ago, when there were more World War II veterans alive. Now, what we learn in our platoon commander training is when we do dismounted hasty attacks, mm-hmm. so this is advance to contact and then do a quick attack on the enemy, is you advance in an arrow with three sections. So your section up front is in an arrowhead formation, and then the two other sections are stacked on either side, and you have your command team with the weapons that in the middle, and you advance to contact, and you literally wait till you get shot at, and then you create a baseline, fix the enemy, and flank them. Now that's cool to do in training. You learn to do that, mm-hmm. but there, not too long ago, there were people alive, and probably still some, at least alive, some veterans of the Second World War and the Korean War that actually did that.
Right.
That's mind blowing.
Right.
right? Before they had UAVs and real-time like reconnaissance over top of the enemy position and whatnot. There are people that actually did that. And if so, that's an example of an SOP. Yeah, it's in doctrine. We still train.
You're still training.
That. I'm qualified to do it, to lead an attack like that. But if you do it, you follow SOP, you run into a machine gun nest in their kill zone. How much of your platoon is left after that?
I was just going to say, you're basically giving them up to slaughter a majority of the guys.
Yeah. Where versus if you're creative and problem solve, and like you see around the entire world today with the use of just drones, mm-hmm. just drones for just a reconnaissance purpose, not to go too into depth with them, just for a reconnaissance purpose. You can map out the terrain in front of you, see things that you don't see on a map, that you don't necessarily see on a GPS, and you can see enemy positions, what has changed, and you can move, you can fire it, you can cover and move while you do that, you can maneuver using that, and just that is miles ahead of what guys used to do. Use the same foundation, yeah. the same thing. Like, we're going to go and create a fire base, we're going to flank them, but instead of just walking towards the machine gun nest, well, you can figure out a better way.
Right. You can keep the theory, but your application can be changed for a little bit more modern use of technology.
Exactly. So when it comes to the loss of lessons learned from war, from combat veterans retiring, I think that to me is the key. And I'm lucky. A lot of the guys that I work with have combat deployments or have similar types of deployments and like lots of good hands-on experience in Nigeria, in Iraq. So I have at least that resource that I can draw upon. Mm-hmm. And if not, young leaders, go talk to the sergeant majors. They've been there for a while. They've definitely done stuff. Don't be afraid. Go talk to them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they definitely want to talk about their experiences to a young leader who wants to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you show that initiative, like, hey,
exactly.
I want to know what's going on. You know, let's talk. They're going to be receptive to that. If you come in telling them what to do, yeah, that sergeant major probably isn't going to be too receptive to that. But like you said, if you come in, hey, we're going to talk about this and we're going to problem solve and help me understand why you do this the way you do it, I may or may not agree with it, but I want to understand it from your perspective. Okay, fine. You know, that's going to work.
And take the time in training. Take mm-hmm. the time, go try it. Figure it out. And yeah. if it doesn't work, don't be afraid to fail. The worst thing to do is to fail forward. It's okay to fail backwards and readjust and then go forward. But if you do something wrong and call it a success and you move forward with that, then there's no point to whatever training you just did.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it doesn't work in exercise, it's not going to work in the real world.
No,
it's just not. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you real quick about is kind of the veteran aspect in Canada. Now, I know you're not there yet yourself. You're still serving. But, you know, something we fight down here is obviously care for our veterans. We make the news all the time, different, you know, bills being passed, burn pits, all this kind of stuff. How are things going up there with actually care when the veterans are getting out? Do you find that they're getting the care they need? Are they still things that, like down here, where we're striving to get better at it, and you know the care could be a lot better in a lot of areas. You know, I know your healthcare system is very different than ours just to begin with, so I didn't know if that plays into it at all. But how is that going for the Canadian veteran?
So the Canadian veteran like community mm-hmm. is obviously much much smaller than than the American veteran community. And that also has a role to play, because when it comes to political weight in the United States, the veteran community has much more weight versus
I see what you're saying.
unfortunately, it's a lot easier in Canada for politicians to simply move them aside and do so publicly and say certain things publicly that would probably cause riots in the States.
Right.
But they can do so here, and it's not even, very few people even bat an eye. So that doesn't help. Another thing with the veteran community in Canada is Canada is not like the United States. We don't operate independently. We are an ally. We are part of NATO. And before NATO, we were part of the British Empire.
Right.
So we always acted as an ally and always filled in capability gaps. So we were never the main effort, if you will. We never, for example, in the Gulf War, we didn't send people en masse like the Americans or the British or the French to actually go and fight directly a mechanized war in the desert. But we did a lot of other operations. So smaller community, less political weight, but also less, you could say actually like less operations. Now that changed with Afghanistan. Afghanistan, we had Kandahar, lots of combat, lots of veterans, lots of consequences, negative consequences coming out of that with troops coming home.
Much greater need for care for the people coming back there. Yeah.
A really good example of unfortunate, but really good example of this was Jody Mittick, Master Corporal Jody Mittick, Canadian sniper. He wrote a book called Unflinching. And he was a sniper. He was part of the Royal Canadian Regiment, and he went to Afghanistan and lost his legs, stepped on a mine. On an IED. And when he got flown back to Canada, we had no facilities for veteran care for loss of limbs. Like there was no at all setup for something like that. So that was outsourced to a civilian, but he was amongst people that were amputees from accidents or from diabetes.
The trauma is very different. It's a different situation. Completely different situation.
Exactly. And now you're working with nurses that are civilians, not military. And it's obviously, it's not the same.
Can go down a... It can have an end result that is not good for the person being cared for.
Exactly. And that's, again, that's part of lessons learned.
Of course.
That were lost. We lost those capabilities because you don't need those capabilities in peacetime. And Canada is not a peacetime military. We're a wartime military. And if you look through Canadian military history, that's what the Canadian military is the regular, the reg force is there to maintain the capabilities so that when a wartime happens, we have the capability of training up a militia into a reg force and sending them overseas. That means that in the peacetime, we drop capabilities like
funding goes away. Everything goes away.
Everything. So in Jody Minnick's case, that's like a very good example. And he details it much better in his book. And so today, I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's very difficult to really draw the line and say, when do veterans, like how much do we owe veterans? And then that's a hard conversation.
Yeah,
to have
it is.
Because these are people that are willing to go and fight and die. And I work with them every day and I'm lucky for it. They're awesome, awesome people. And when you have, work environment related injuries because of it, would be it physical or mental, come back, is there enough care? Say we did have the proper care. Is it enough?
Is it ever enough? Right. Yeah, that's the question. Yeah. Right? It could always be better, I guess.
Exactly. So the veteran community in Canada, I'd like to say it's doing okay.
Okay.
I would like to say it's doing okay. Although that is very hard to say if it's true, because the number one problem health-wise in the Canadian military right now is mental health, which is very bizarre considering we don't have any combat operations happening. So, you know, there's a lot of room to improve.
Yeah.
There's probably what we can get down to. And this is all something that Lieutenant Colonel retired Steve Nash, and he's a Canadian officer who was in the Special Forces, who more or less built up the Canadian Special Forces into what we know it like today, with JTF2. He was in that transition period from whatever the Canadian Special Forces were before into now we have very renowned JTF2, CSOR, and CGIRU. And he was there during that period. And I got a chance to meet him. And one of the things he said to us, and I'll never forget it, was the state, in Canada we call it the crown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the king now.
Now the king, yeah.
That is. Queen is dead, long live the king.
Yep.
The crown or the state, when you join the military, will use you. As long as you are there, it will use you and it will use you up. And that is the name of the game. Mm-hmm. It's the military.
That's the military.
And when you leave, you will be replaced.
Yep.
And it will not bat an eye. And that's not necessarily good. That's not necessarily bad. That's just, it's the meat grinder.
It's reality. It's the military. More than anything.
The mission must go on.
100%.
So what he said in reference to that was basically the number one person that is going to look after you and is going to take care of you is yourself. If you try to offload it to the state or to the crown, they're not going to be as motivated or as caring as you can be to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout your career, if you're in the military, throughout your career, no matter what you do, you always have choices to make for your own personal health. And a good example that he told me is, do you want to be able to hold your grandkids? Do you want to be able to go play with your grandkids? Or are your knees going to be ruined? Is your back going to be ruined by that time? And he said that those are your choices to make.
Yeah, those are your realities.
Just remember that you are going to have to take care of yourself, because the number one person who has your own interests at heart is yourself. It's not the crown. It's not the state. And it's not because the military doesn't like you or appreciate you. It's just the way it's set up.
Yeah. But I see it down here as well. You know, the VA is the VA, talk good, bad, indifferent to about it. But we're seeing more and more that the best care that a veteran can get is from other veterans that have started nonprofits that are taking care of each other, helping out with service dogs, helping out with, you know, alternative medicines, physical fitness, providing a mission, you know, providing mental health support, whatever it is. You see just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of military members, veterans stepping up, because you are correct. Nobody is going to take care of you better than you and the brother that was right next to you or the sister that was right next to you. And that's what we're seeing now is all these different organizations are providing the care that veterans actually need, so that you're not reliant on the state, the crown, whatever your government is, but you're doing it as a community rather than kind of outsourcing it to the government, which we always know doesn't have your best interest. They have their best interest and, you know, an overall interest at heart. So I think that speaks exactly to what, you know, that officer was talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's
the way to go. community is always the way to go, the lowest level.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's one of the things that's very difficult. In the military, you make friends very rapidly.
Yes.
Like everywhere.
Yeah.
And no matter what you move, those shared experiences are, you can meet someone for 2 months and be their friend for the rest of your life.
100%. Yep.
And when all of a sudden, when you get out, you retire, whenever I'll get out or retire, and I'm definitely going to miss that.
Yeah. It's one of the hardest things.
You need that community back. Yeah. Find it, fight for it.
You have
to take care of yourself. Eat right, exercise properly, like become athletic, keep, if you're in the infantry, I believe you can be in the infantry without ruining your knees or back.
Like not
you
easy.
You can become a beast. You can become, don't look to be fit. You train, anyone can do a Murph. Like anyone can do 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 squats. Yeah. Like if you train, you can become fit. Become athletic. Mm-hmm. If you're athletic, you will know much more how to take care of your body. Yeah. Nutrition-wise, education-wise, fitness-wise.
Flexibility, having hips that exactly. work. You know, all those things help.
Exactly. So just in that, and then you can have your career in the military, and then when you do retire, you're already going to have your health on your side rather than having your career grind your body down. And that's already a plus.
Well, Hendrick, I think that's a great place to end. You know, I think that's some great advice from, like I said, a new leader in the military community. Would you like to say anything else before we leave? I mean, like I said, I think you've really given us an insight, not just into the Canadian military, but just leadership in general. And I like that conversation because I think it's so important that we, in the civilian world and military, are promoting good leaders and being a part of a solution. So I do appreciate that conversation. But please, do you have anything before we take off?
Yeah, thank you. And for everyone down in Fort Polk, see you in January. When we go down there, Canadians will do a little visit, and I think it's Geronimo who plays the Op 4 over there. Anyways, whoever the Op 4 is going to be, we're coming for you.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you so much for coming to the show. This is an awesome experience, and I love that people get to listen to a little bit of a different perspective. So I do appreciate it. For Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, thank you so much. Thank Hendrick for coming on the show. You know, when I first asked him to come on the show, I thought we were going to talk a lot about the differences between the Canadian military and the American military. And we did. We talked a lot about that. But I think the conversation really morphed into leadership, recruiting and retention, you know, mission, all of these different things that we talk about on the show. And it was just really cool to kind of hear the perspective of a new leader in the military, especially how we spoke about non-commissioned officers and their role and in making sure that we pass down lessons learned and all of that. I thought that was really cool. And I just appreciate his perspective. Again, as somebody new to the military who's in a leadership role kind of right away, you know, coming straight out of the academy, it has to be a difficult position, especially, you know, coming out of the tail end of COVID and everything that he had to deal with up in Canada. It was just really cool to see kind of how his mind was formed and where he sees himself going. So again, Hendrick, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was awesome to have you on. Again, we're trying out this new format where we do our little blurb at the end and get right to the interview in the beginning. I hope everybody likes that. Send back some feedback. If you like the old way or the new way, send it to bulletproofveteran@gmail.com, or you can go to bulletproofveteran.com and you can click the contact form and send me a message that way. You know, to me, it's no big difference in editing or anything like that. So it's really what you guys want. I still want to do the veteran-owned and operated business of the week. And we'll do it, you know, now at the end with the, you know, in this format. But if you guys like it at the beginning, shoot me a message, tell me, and I can always switch back. Speaking of which, our veteran owned and operated business of the week is the Drinkin' Bros podcast. Now, they do not need me to shout them out. I mean, they are wildly popular. But if you aren't listening to the Drinkin' Bros podcast and you haven't been over to their store, first of all, their clothing is awesome. Their designs, Dan Holloway, and I believe his girlfriend, do most of the designs. They're defund politicians, a hashtag AIPAC, defund the FBI, abolish the FBI, abolish the ATF. They have some of the coolest shirts, the weirdest designs you could come up with. She's a 10, but she has pronouns in her bio. Any of these shirts, they're awesome. The hats are great, snapbacks. They even have like a $40 hat. It's a big joke on the show. Really, you need to check them out. The Drinkin' Bros podcast is probably the reason that I got started. I was listening to them. It was started by the guys from Black Rifle Coffee, Jared Taylor and Matt Best and Evan Hafer, and Rocco was on it at the time. And Ross, and it kind of morphed into a different show as everybody kind of went their own ways. Now it's Ross Patterson and Dan Holloway. They do sports shows. They do, you know, obviously topical. They have interviews. They have some of the best guests that you can get. I could listen to Dan, all the time. His perspectives are very interesting. I don't always agree with what he says, but I love the conversations that he gets into. I think he asks great questions during the interviews. Ross does a great job of just kind of moving interviews along and structuring the show. So if you're not listening to the Drinkin' Bros, you really should check them out. Their fake news show on Thursdays is probably one of the funniest things you'll listen to because life is funny. And Dan's Citizens podcast, which started as the American Party with Medal of Honor recipient Dakota Meyer, has now morphed into the Citizens podcast. And that one, if you're not listening to that, you're really missing out. He has had some amazing guests on to talk about what it means to be a citizen, to be in a community, something we talk about on this show all the time. So please head over, take a look. Take a listen to all of that. They're on every podcast provider, YouTube, all of that. So you can check out Drinkin' Bros. You could check out their sports show. You could check out the Citizens podcast. You can go over and check out their seltzer line that they're now into, Hard AF. We've ordered some. The guys like it around. I'm not a big seltzer guy myself, so I wanted to defer the taste testing to other people. Have gotten very good reviews back. It's an 8%, so it will knock you on your ass. So just be careful. All right. But, it's a lot of fun what they're doing over there. Like I said, their products are amazing. Their information that they put out is some of the best that you're going to get around. It's a no-hold-barred look at the world. And like I said, their guests are some of the best that are out there in the circuit. So please go over, listen, buy some merch, check out the seltzer, all of that. So Drinking Bros podcast is the veteran-owned and operated business of the week. Again, not that they really need me to shout them out, but I do anyway. So I think that's it, guys. I think we're good for the week. As always, like us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, check out the YouTube page, leave a comment on the podcast providers, give a 5-star, all that kind of fun stuff. Send show ideas and critiques to bulletproofveteran@gmail.com or head over to the website bulletproofveteran.com. I think that's about it. I think we can rock and roll. But actually, real quick, I don't want to forget. Awesome job by Rob Novotny, Project Nine Line, Team RWB, out at the Heart of the Eagle this past weekend. I had a blast. Me and Harper ran it. She did awesome. Finished on my shoulders, but she ran in the middle. It was her first 5K, so hey, I was a happy dad. But those guys put on an amazing event at Hexter State Park. You got to love what Rob is doing. So big shout out to him. It was a packed event. And as always, he always puts on, great races. And he does it every year. And he's only expanding. So again, shout out to Rob. And that's it. Now I'm going to stop. All right. So for Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, my name is Jason. And thank you for your service.